Thank you for listening to Clear Edge Marketing's The Edge podcast. This episode is brought to you by Clearly Rated. Clearly Rated is the only client and talent experience survey platform that is built specifically for staffing and recruiting firms. Their Best of Staffing program is the true symbol of quality in the recruiting industry, recognized by the American Staffing Association with more than a decade of supporting many of the top firms in the industry. We appreciate their support and shared dedication to creating a diverse, equitable, and inclusive workforce. Find the industry's top service providers and learn more at clearlyrated.com. On this episode of The Edge, Onward Search Group President Eliana Hassan joins Clear Edge Marketing CEO and founder Leslie Vickery to talk about dropping the guilt as a working parent, creating equitable workplaces, and how career sponsorship starts with accessibility. Eliana and Leslie then discuss how these topics have intertwined throughout her career journey. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, listeners. Welcome to The Edge podcast. I am your host, Leslie Vickery, the CEO and founder of Clear Edge Marketing. For those of you new to The Edge, we feature executive women in the recruitment industry in an effort to shine the light on the wonderful women leading our industry forward and up and comers, if they can see it, and I mean women in executive roles, and understand the day-to-day life of the C-suite, they can certainly envision and be it. For today's episode, it brings me great pleasure to welcome Eliana Hassan, Group President for Onward Search. Welcome, Eliana.
Thank you so much, Leslie. I'm looking forward to our time together.
Okay, well, you are quickly coming up on your six-month anniversary. Why don't you tell us a little bit to start, because not everyone may know about Onward Search. Tell us a little bit about your company.
This has been a fantastic 6 months for me. So I'll start by saying that I'm loving every minute of it. So Onward Search is a national staffing agency, and we have a focus specifically on creative marketing, technology, and gaming talent. We live in the nexus of digital transformation, and through our 15-year history, we have armed over 5,000 corporate and agency clients with the talent that they need to execute their strategic initiatives. So I balance my bias with experience when I say that we've got a fantastic team. I represent today on this call a passionate group of exemplary staffing professionals that work tirelessly to find our talent, their dream jobs, and help them to develop their careers. And to give you an idea, Leslie, our teams have proudly helped over 17,000 and counting professionals find work. So we love what we do. And as an organization, we are entrepreneurial and disruptive and innovative, and we're very passionate about diversity. And we really appreciate the opportunity you've given me here today to speak with the many women in our industry who want to learn about growth. What else can I tell you? Hot off the press, I'm thrilled to share that we have been named the number one company to work for by women in the staffing and recruitment space by Her Insight, which is an independent website. And this is in addition to our Best of Staffing with Clearly Rated, as well as our Best CEO and Best Women Companies to Work For by Comparably. So that is Onward Search.
That's exciting. Well, certainly congratulations on all of the accolades. That speaks volumes to the company you are, and certainly being in all things digital and gaming and so forth. I know being a digital agency ourselves, it's by far the fastest growing area of our business. And we're always looking for talent, and I know how hard it is to find. So congratulations on having such a stellar reputation in the space. We both started actually in the recruitment industry the same year, from what I could tell, at least on your bio, and that's 1998. I'd love to have you share specifics around your career journey. In particular, how did you land in the staffing industry?
Well, it's funny because none of us ever expect to land in the staffing industry, right? I actually started my career at IBM, and that was a great first job for me to have out of school. I was there under Lou Gerstner's leadership, and many of the fundamentals I hold dear today around sales and account management and customer service and leadership and integrity were all learned during my time there. I was there a couple of years, and I had several colleagues that were jumping ship to go and do technology recruitment. And the idea of connecting people with companies and not just a technical solution or hardware or software was super interesting to me. So I started researching it. When I found that it was an opportunity to do something impactful and inherently good every day and call that work and get paid for it, it was a bit of a no-brainer for me. And in doing my research, I found an opportunity to work in an industry that spoke to both technology and brand and design and marketing. And now that's called digital, but back then it was called web. And so I found a company called Webstaff at the time that specialized in web staffing. I looked them up. I walked into their office, asked to speak to the branch manager, and that's how my career in staffing began. And from there, I spent a good bit of my early staffing career in the digital space and then left to pursue business process outsourcing and larger impact projects, all within the marketing supply chain. Did that for a few years and then began my own consultancy that focused on organizational performance and executive search and coaching. So as I was doing that, I had a number of clients that were actually in the staffing industry. So was hired away by Cruise Control, who was in the staffing industry and was there before I was recruited to Onward Search for my current role. That's what my journey to Onward has looked like.
Oh, wow. It's quite a journey indeed from coming into the industry and also being an entrepreneur. It gives you certainly a strong lens for the role you've been in for the past 6 months. And I swear it is my mission to make the staffing industry a destination versus what we all fall into. And mainly because if you think about it, all of us love it. Even if you leave, somehow you make your way back. So we've got to work on the brand of our own industry and make it something people are more intentional about joining. Speaking of that, it is always an exciting time when you think about our industry right now and the fast growth and pace. When you think about the segment that you're in particular, and like you mentioned, you keep coming back to that creative and digital side. What excites you most today about our industry?
I think you nailed it earlier when you said that it's so fast paced. It is dynamic. It's not static. And for me, I think the fact that it constantly evolves and it captures everything from the complexities of marketing and product development to UX and UI and all of the technologies that power these major initiatives and organizations, it's really fascinating to me. So, you know, for me, the creative digital space and now technology, which is where my roots were, is such a tremendous sandbox to play in. There's never a dull moment. And I think that's what I love most about it.
Well, I'm going to shift gears here for a minute and talk a little bit about mentorship. It's so important to me. I even co-founded a company called ARA. It's Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. And our original mission was really to set up mentorships. It could be peer-to-peer, it could be reverse mentoring, traditional mentoring, but really finding an opportunity to share with women that they're not alone, give them opportunities to learn and grow from others, and make it a situation where they actually had access to mentors, where sometimes they weren't sure how to find them. That said, as of late, I've really come to realize that sponsorship is equally, if not more important. And just a quick example, mentors will give advice to people. Let's say they're building their personal brand. They may encourage people to get more speaking engagements or be on podcasts or whatever that may be, but really put their name out there. A sponsor will not only suggest that, but they'll actually line up the speaking engagement. They'll put their name out there, talk about them when they're not in the room. Same thing could be said about filling boards or promotions and so forth. So someone who will be your champion and really help rise you up. How have you gone from being sponsored throughout your career to now sponsoring others? Perhaps you can talk a little bit about that as it relates to your own journey.
Absolutely. And that's a great point and great question, Leslie. The funny thing is that long before I became an executive, I found myself sponsoring colleagues and talent and even clients. I'm a natural connector of people. So I'm like this extreme extrovert. And you combine that with the fact that I'm not shy. And, you know, when I look back at my career, there have been so many times that I have raised my hand, sometimes even being the most junior person in the room, to advocate for other people and try to drive those opportunities that I could see as a benefit for others when they couldn't see it for themselves. And as recruiters, we are connectors of people. You know, we should be sponsoring people every single day, despite the title that we have. And we have this unique ability to see and map career journeys for the people who trust us to find them opportunities. Today, as an executive and in every leadership role that I've held, I do my best to reciprocate the sponsorship that I've had. And I've had tremendous sponsorship in my career. And that sponsorship really starts with me and being accessible to my teams and vulnerable and allowing others to learn from my mistakes and passing on that wisdom and creating shortcuts and making, you know, as you said, the introductions for them that's really going to help them to advance their careers and check the boxes that they need, whether it's through speaking engagements or even connecting them with opportunities in terms of jobs and or deals and contracts. It's about ensuring, one, that you have the right people around the table, but ensuring that their voices are actually heard and that every day everyone is empowered to be a sponsor, not just the executives.
It's such an important role for people to play for others. And it's certainly one that as you rise up in your own career, it becomes a little bit easier. But I love that you talked about it's something you can do at any stage of your career to continue doing that. You called yourself an extreme extrovert. And I'd love to talk about that for a second, because oftentimes women will talk about not having the time to be able to build and maintain, or even just maintain their own network. And often to be that connector, as you said, and that sponsor, you need to have a strong network to be able to do that. But it's one of the first things that can fall when you're trying to balance or juggle between having a family and a career. Talk to us a little bit about how you focus on not only building a network inside the companies you work with, because oftentimes they'll just focus on that, but also outside the companies you work for and why that's so important.
Networks are absolutely a critical component of growth and success. So regardless of the industry or the levels in their career, I personally have tried to always learn from who I see as the best in their craft or industry. Even early in my career, I found myself seeking mentors and people I could learn from that were levels above my reach. And I had success because I asked, right? My biggest advice to my teams now and the women that I mentor is to be very clear in your ask. I'm also a disruptor, and I'm often not happy with the status quo. So for me, a lot of my network is executives that are seeking to do better, to drive change, to build best practice while having fun along the way. I always look into networking opportunities with that disruption lens in mind. My network of peers is built on ensuring I come to work every day with everything that I've got and a strong commitment to follow through and being holistic and leading with integrity and having internal customer service helps build that network. I would say outside of Onward, currently my network is very broad, but it's a range of professionals that I've at some point crossed paths with. And it ranges from clients and talent that I've placed 20 years ago that are now in the C-suite. And I've represented talent to the best of my ability. And as recruiters, we all have that connection of being the person to connect someone to their dream job and staying in touch with those people, those clients and their careers really does help to keep your network warm. I'd say the only other thing that I try to do regularly is to contribute to that network. So one, by keeping it warm. It's harder now in the virtual days, Leslie, but when I was commuting to work every day on my way to work and every day back, whether I was working in New York or London, I was finding time to connect with one to two people a day within my network to stay up to date on what they were doing and where I might have an opportunity to support them and vice versa. And then lastly, I would say really understanding what your own superpower is and how you can share that to strengthen those around you. So doing that has served me well in terms of building networks, both internal to the organizations I serve, as well as the broader communities.
Well, I would say certainly a superpower you're representing is the superpower of connecting and connector, which is fantastic. And I don't think I've let a podcast go through without mentioning this book since Teresa Carroll mentioned it, but there's a great book called How Women Rise. And there's a whole section about building your own network and actually then taking advantage of your network. And I love the fact that you have been able to do both. You spend the time cultivating it, creating those relationships, just taking the time to make phone calls during your commutes is incredible, but then taking it to that next level and connecting people and sponsoring them. It's a real world example of exactly what they were writing about in that book, which is to not only build it and create it, but to find a way to take advantage of it in a really positive way to leverage that network. And you've done a great job of doing that. I remember you telling me a story of you being the first salesperson at Aquint. You even helped build their first strategic sales process. And I mention this because when it comes to using your voice, which you talked about a little bit in your last answer, and really having the confidence when you see something in a company for an opportunity of what could happen or what could be in a service or a product or solution, you seem to be very confident in seeing that, putting a business case together, and then actually doing that. How did that experience at Aquint give you the confidence to use your voice throughout your career to perhaps always share ideas when you notice something or be the first to suggest change?
Great question, Leslie. You know, confidence is something you build over time with experience. There were two key lessons for me in that opportunity that I carry with me today in driving transformative change. The first is that success starts small. Having measurable success, even on a small scale, is a great way to drive change and get buy-in at all levels. And in my case, what we were doing in our part of the world, in my region at the time, was working well in a difficult staffing market like Washington, D.C. So the success we built certainly gave me the confidence to share that across the global enterprise. Second, I would say, is sponsorship. You know, we talked about sponsorship earlier. In this instance, I was working for a tremendous sponsor and leader, and she was tough, but she believed in me and she gave me the opportunity to drive broad-based change in my region. And she was a sponsor when sponsorship wasn't a thing. She gave me the audience and the platform to roll it out globally. So she would put me in front of the C-suite long before I thought I was ready. And her trust in me and her push meant everything for me personally. And failure isn't an option. So a combination of those things is what's built my confidence to drive change over time. And what's amazing is that same leader, Blanche Woodbridge, sits on my senior leadership team at Onward. It's such an honor and brings things full circle for me.
Oh, that's incredible. A true testament to your leadership. I love hearing stories when people have done something so transformative together early in their careers and have stayed together over time. There are several examples of that. And we need to get you on the bigger stage here too, Eliana, to share your story, just the power of rising up others and using your voice and leveraging your network and superpowers is really incredible. I want to shift for a second to talk about family and really kind of hone in on your personal story, which really I'm sure will shed a light on who you are just as a person and a leader and how you are with those surrounding you. Your family came from Ethiopia during a communist time, and you mentioned that your parents wanted to give you the American dream. Share with us how that decision, their dream, really has helped shape you into the leader you are today. Perhaps you could walk us through your experience.
Absolutely. And I'm going to try to do that without my voice crackling here, because I get so passionate when people ask me about my journey as a first generation American. So yeah, my parents made the decision to leave their family and everything they knew and a pretty comfortable life in Ethiopia in the 70s to seek the American dream for their child. And I would say that I had the benefit of all of the positive reinforcement around achieving anything that I wanted to do because I was in the greatest country in the world. And to this day, I believe that and I instill that in my children. And I would say that their vision for me to have everything from freedom of speech to the best economy in the world to go after was so anti-Ethiopian culture at the time. It was a very male-dominated and chauvinistic culture. And so to have a father raising me who often said, you can do everything that a guy can do. And, you know, he taught me to change a tire, I think, by the time I was 11. But he would tell me, when you meet someone who can put their pants on head down and not have to lift their 2 feet up, then you should be impressed. Otherwise, remember, you know, the American dream is yours to capture. I would say that that level of inspiration and support has everything to do with who I am today. They are my drive. I certainly hope to make them proud with everything that I do as a professional executive, but also as a mom and as a person and an American who tries to live a life of service. Their decision to move to the best country in the world has certainly been the best decision for my life personally and something I'm grateful for every single day.
What a gift. We often talk about where everything starts in the home and the family and at a young age, and that, you know, we are born with confidence or being a confident person. And oftentimes that can be stripped away. Yet you were given not only that gift by your dad always telling you that and the stories that you shared, but also your parents willing to leave everything and come here for you. But really, they were gaining so much opportunity, and talk about making them proud. You mentioned it like a future state. I'm guessing they're extraordinarily proud of who you are today and who you've been your entire life. You certainly haven't taken for granted that gift that they gave you and are using it to your best ability, which is incredible. We did talk about, Eliana, with your kids even. It's tough when you think about rising in business and being part of growing companies. You were part of Companies Sold. You mentioned London and being all over the world, and you traveled, you said, more than you ever cared to, gone every week, and how hard that was on you as a mother and a woman. What advice do you have for other women facing similar challenges? And I'll say that for myself too. I often struggle. I have a 5-year-old son and he seems perfectly fine when I leave the house. I think it's more on me than it is him, but how do you make it through those times? And would you do anything differently?
That is probably the toughest question I'm going to be faced with on today's podcast. And this is one that I wish I had someone answer for me when I was going through it. Balance is really difficult in today's day and age, no matter what we do. And when you are an executive or in such a fast-paced industry like staffing, I feel as though the complexities of that are absolutely compounded. My advice to women around balance and mothers in particular would be to drop the guilt. There is so much guilt from society and our communities and even within ourselves that we deal with on a regular basis. And the guilt of not being at every rehearsal or being at every performance can sometimes really eat away at you. I would say that what I've learned over the years is that my kids have watched and they've learned that I love them more than anything in the world. And they're actually proud of the fact that I have been able to balance a career that I love with being a mom. And so I would say drop the guilt would be the first advice that I have. And the second would be to outsource non-strategic items if you can. I really try to take everything that isn't work and isn't my kids and do my best to outsource that, right? Like we should drink from the Kool-Aid and outsource to other industries. And so I do that in my personal life to create balance. But taking the guilt head on is definitely the biggest advice I have.
I love all of that advice, and we'll take it to heart again personally as I continue on my own journey. And, you know, I find it's different for everyone, and we all need to remember that, like, what works for you may not work for me, what works for me may not work for you, but there's always something we can gain from just hearing stories. And one of the main pieces is that you're not alone. And the other thing for me is just to be forgiving of yourself. Again, going back to that How Women Rise book, there's a whole chapter and segment on ruminating. And that's something I really struggle with. And it's usually that wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning. And a big piece of it is what you talked about, is that feeling of guilt. And we really just need to be forgiving of ourselves and know we're doing the best we possibly can. And we're trying to give them a great life. And to your point, my gosh, what a role model for them to see you, and the shattering of the glass and all of those things. It's so critical. It's a mission that we have to stick to, because it will make a change for generations to come. And speaking of that, that was a perfect segue. So thank you. I recently hosted a panel at Staffing World, and the topic was on allyship. We talk a lot about equality and allyship and how change starts at home. And according to the World Economic Forum, it's going to take over 130 years. I think the current quote is 136, and it added over 30 because of COVID, but to reach equality. So you have 3 kids. I have 1 son. Our kids, their kids, our grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so on would never see equality based on those statistics, which is crazy to me. And again, as you mentioned, just by being raised by you, you are helping that next generation see what women can achieve and that there should be equality in the workplace and in the home. What are some of the things you believe can help make change for generations to come, in addition to what we talked about, that other people can consider too?
I would probably answer it in 2 ways. The first thing I think we can do as individuals, as parents, as mothers, is ensure that we are instilling that level of equality in our children, and knowing that every single person has an opportunity to ensure that they are creating an equitable environment in the work that they do in the future. My son is absolutely an ally. So part of my obligations, I think, to future generations is ensuring that my son grows up to not just appreciate equality, but actually be an ally that takes the action to ensure in whatever area he works that equality is something that he has to strive for. And, you know, I would say the same for my girls. So as a person and an individual, I would say that's what I would do. And as an executive, it's really, really important that we have the discussions and we set the example in our own organization. So one thing I am very proud of is the fact that we have 100% pay parity at Onward Search. It's really about opening up the books, ensuring that you can invite in the compensation consultants and you can put in the hard work as a leadership team to ensure that it starts with your organization, and being able to cascade that and sponsor that level of transparency and drive to equality as an executive as well.
Well, congratulations on the pay parity front and setting that standard. We need more companies to follow suit. So hopefully those listening will take that to heart. And I love what you said about your son and showing him and teaching him the importance of being an ally. When I had Grayson, the first reaction I actually got from a lot of people was, "Don't you wish you had a girl?" And they just felt like, with all of the work I do around DE&I and starting an entire women's group, that I would have wanted a daughter. And my first reaction was, I was just happy to have a child. And second was really exactly what you said. What an opportunity to make a change where we need to make change the most. And that is bringing men to the table, into the conversation, and working hand in hand together. So I actually had the opposite reaction and felt like it was just such a wonderful opportunity and joy to be able to make such a great difference on all fronts, quite frankly, to bring everyone together And, you know, I spend a lot of time in our own industry, and we've recently had several different surveys looking at the foundation of DE&I in our own space within recruitment and staffing between the Women's Business Collaborative and Clearly Rated. Some statistics basically are that female employees make up 48%. It's almost 50-50, and depending on the survey, it's even higher than 50% of entry-level positions. But when you get into the C-suite, the number drops pretty dramatically to around 21%, with only 4% representing women of color. I'm going to ask you a challenge question, although you've really done a nice job already. So you've kind of answered this a little bit, even with the pay parity piece. But what is one way you will challenge yourself, not just within the company you're in, but to impact change on the topic of making our industry a more diverse, more equitable, and more inclusive place?
That's a great question. And it's a challenge that I take to heart, because it is true. There certainly isn't enough diversity, certainly among women of color within staffing, but even within executive leadership in the industries that I've served, in the marketing digital space, as well as the technology verticals. And so what I have done is ensure that I am inviting people to the table, that I am speaking at and engaging various groups to create diversity at the top of funnel level, right? So ensuring that whether it's speaking at high schools or colleges, really digging in deeper than and further than the current employment market, if you will, or the entry-level professionals, to ensure that people understand the different options that they can have in their careers, and introducing it at a much earlier age, and ensuring that we're not stumbling into staffing, but people really understand that there is a career out there that can be built on helping people find their dream jobs and helping organizations build the workforce that they need in order to do what they set out to do. I would say that that's one thing. The other challenge that I have of my leadership team as well is to ensure that they are really out there and networking, and ensuring that their networks are expansive and inclusive of all of the types of people that are in the workforce, and inviting as many people to learn about Onward and to learn about staffing in general for them as well. So I hold my leadership team to that same standard and challenge.
Oh, great. That was going to be a question I had for you, but you just answered it, is what challenge do you have for others with a bias of action? And I love that you're challenging your leadership team. And not only that, but you are following suit yourself and showing them and leading by such a great example. So thank you for that. So Eliana, we're coming up on the end here of our discussion, and I'd love to ask you a couple rapid fire questions if you're ready.
Shoot.
All right. So tell us, this is very important, what are you listening to, watching, and learning from?
I am a big fan of McKinsey as an organization. So I listen to both McKinsey's Business and Strategy podcast, as well as Deloitte Global Insights. And they range from everything around diversity, equity, and inclusion to some of the technology trends that we're seeing in our business today. And so I will definitely find time for that, you know, 3-4 times a week if I can.
Nice. And there's some great McKinsey reports, actually, some on women in leadership and DE&I that have recently come out as well. So I'm a big fan. Okay. So what is one thing you will not compromise on when it comes to wellness and balance?
My prayer and meditation time in the mornings. That's sacred to me. It focuses me for the day. It's where I practice my gratitude. And so that is a non-negotiable for my overall well-being.
I love that. That is something I aspire to do. I have to follow that motto of right when your alarm goes up, get out of bed. Don't sit in bed. Get up, take that time, because I said it early enough where I would have that time. So I really appreciate that and respect that. What is the single best piece of career advice that you'd have your younger self give your today self?
I would say my advice would be to trust that I was enough, to trust that my instincts and my experience and my strengths would serve me well and to just trust that I was enough.
I agree completely. All right. My last question for you, if you could have dinner with one person, who would it be?
That's such a hard question. There's so many people I would love having dinner with. I would probably say if it was just one, I would choose Oprah Winfrey. And I would choose Oprah because I admire her as a leader, as someone who's truly dominated in her industry. She's just so tremendous. But along with that legacy and brand that she's built, she's been able to do it while she's remained humble and completely relentless in her giving and in her philanthropic work. So
that is a really tough question. I'm not even sure how I would answer it, but Oprah would certainly be top of the list for sure. I love the answer. All right. We are actually out of time. Thank you so much for joining us here today. If people would like to get in touch with you, what is your preferred method?
I am always on LinkedIn, so feel free to look me up on LinkedIn. And my email is ehassan@onwardsearch.com. So either work great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again so much. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time we've spent. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Edge. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it in iTunes. Feel free to email Leslie at lvickery@clearedgemarketing.com and let us know if you have questions, would like to be a guest or suggest a potential guest, or share topics you'd like to see in the future.